So here's the thing about Freebie Friday, kids. When I get something in my mind, something I need to share, I think, with the universe, in less than 5 minutes, I can put all this podcast stuff together. And through the magic of editing and a couple of neat little tricks here and there when it comes to technology, whammo jammo, presto change-o, or as the great clown magician, the ever-effervescent Wizzo from Bozo used to say, dooty 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 dooty, which is actually pretty creepy. You'd have to be a Bozo-centric person to understand what that was. But here is the reason for Freebie Friday. And if you think saying Freebie Friday over and over again is easy, go ahead and try it. I've already edited this 3 times. You should have heard the shit that came out of my mouth. Today was the day to get a haircut for me. I took Teresa to work. Drove in on the Eisenhower Expressway, dropped her off, and I was heading down to this barbershop called Ray's on the northwest side of Chicago, where I grew up. And over the years, you know, listen, I got to call it what it is. I don't have a whole lot of hair, but that's not even the point. And what hair I do have pretty much now is like quills on a porcupine. I mean, look, I'll be 60 in December, and when the hair on my neckline starts connecting with the hair on my, you know, my ears and then goes into my nose, you know, you got a problem. But at some point, you got to trim it back. And I haven't had a haircut for probably 6-8 weeks. And I was thinking, you know, the summer's time's coming and it's getting hot out. And I got a couple of golf events next week. And I don't want to just be feeling like I need a haircut. So off we go. And over time, I have learned, especially going back to Ray's Place, which was not always Ray's Place. There was probably a dozen different businesses in that corner shop, which is at Keeler and Montrose in Chicago, if you know where that's at. It is more about immersing myself in the experience of how I grew up than it is about a haircut. Because even though the neighborhood has changed, how I feel about that certain part of the city has not. And every time I get there, I don't realize even how much I need it until I get in it. So I'm fighting the traffic and cutting through lanes and I got to get off. And, you know, I'm on autopilot because I've been gone there for, you know, most of my life. And even though Ray's Place has only been there maybe 10 years, and where else can you get a haircut for 10 bucks? The guy is an artist. The guy is a magician, not quite like Wizzo. But when it comes down to doing hair, this guy's something else. And he is just works like a machine. There's probably 6-8 people in at any given time. I've waited up to 2.5 hours reading 17-year-old magazines just to get a haircut from this guy. For 10 bucks with a $5 tip, he smiles, we shake hands, you know, and I'm out of there. So it's worth the drive. It's worth the wait. I really enjoy it. It's a break in the day. And outside of the prerequisite Jerry Springer show that's looping on the TV, which the sound is off, so that works. Other than that, it's a pretty good experience. However, I have time to think about how my life was many, many years ago in that neighborhood. And everybody that I know pretty much is no longer living or no longer lives there. And I have to make this loop when I go there. I drive past Belding Grammar School, then I drive past where I lived on Berteau Street, and I look for the Connor kids next door, but they're not there anymore. And I look for the Stitch kids across the street, and they're not anymore. I look for the Gerke kids next to us, and they're not there anymore. And I go past the playground, and it's filled with kids, but it's not the playground that I grew up with. Now it is multi-purpose and lawsuit-friendly, if you get my drift. It's things out there that I don't even know what they are, and it's mostly just flat. And when I lived in that area, it was a glorious oasis to be a kid. There was a field house there that was just the beehive of activity. And I was just swimming in the memories. I actually pulled over today and parked in the side street. And you got to watch, though, because there's cops everywhere. You can't pull over by a school because people think something's going on, which is just shitty. But I was just enjoying it. And I'm watching all these kids play and thinking, boy, oh, boy, I'm sure they're having fun. But they don't know what it's like to stand back off to the side behind the field house and watch Pat Brady hit a 16-inch clincher, a Windy City clincher, clear across the fence and then across the street and then across the neighbor's fence onto the roof of the house across the way. They don't know what that's like. They don't know what it's like that every October we would have the fun fair at school, and it was connected to the park that was right there, the field house. And it was magical. I mean, you could win the goldfish, you know, you just toss the ball into the goldfish thing and take home a couple of goldfish that lived about a week. And there were games, and there was fun, and there was tickets, and everybody got along, and we had a good time, and it didn't cost much, and everybody was kind of together. They don't know what that's like. They don't know what it's like in the middle of winter to play football out in front of the field house, you know, just in gym shoes and a jacket while you're freezing half to death, but you're having a hell of a good time doing it with your friends. It was, of course, full tackle football with no equipment. And they don't know what it's like on the backside of that when we'd be home eating dinner and we could hear this horrible polka music a half a block away playing on the loudspeaker because Mr. Speck had flooded the softball field, which was asphalt, and he had flooded it over a week's period of time, layer after layer after layer of ice. And when it was done, we knew it was done when the polka music started. And we'd go skating until our lungs ached. They don't know what that feels like. I do, and so do my friends and people that live there. There was a sense of friendship, and there was a sense of being neighbors, and there was a sense of community that I don't know still exists in most places in the country. Maybe it's just a sign of the times. Maybe it's just the way things go and things change, and I get that. But what a magical, magical time that it was. And so when I go get a haircut there, I make the rounds, and I think of all that stuff, and then I sit and just let it wash over me. Right down the street from where Ray's Barbershop is, used to be Beale's Bakery. It was the best baked goods in the Northern Hemisphere, bar none. And that's gone. Right next to where Ray's is at, there's Susie's Beef, which used to be Western Giant Beef when I was a kid. And for a buck, you could walk from the playground when it closed at 9 o'clock, walk up to Western Giant Beef, and for a dollar, get a small bag of fries and a small Coke. What else could you ask for? And speaking of the field house and the playground, some of the people there over the years were just iconic to me. There was a gentleman named Ted Theodore Atchison, and his nickname was Atch. And he ruled the playground there, you know, with a velvet fist. Everybody respected this guy. If you screwed up, you had two choices. You could bend over, touch your ankles, and he'd take out a big piece of wood and smack you right in the ass. Or you could be barred from the playground for a week. There was no bike riding allowed in there. If you rode your bike, get this, if you rode your bike in the playground, and you knew it, because everybody knew it, we knew the rules, but you got to test them. If you rode your bike in the playground, you could expect that Atch would take out a wooden baseball bat and throw it at the spokes of your bike so the bike didn't work anymore. So you could get your ass smacked, you could get kicked out of the park, the guy would throw a bat, and we loved him. We respected him. And not one parent ever said, I'm going to sue you because you're too hard on my kids. The field house, however, was segregated, not by color, not by race, not by religion, but boys and girls, and never the twain shall meet, or so they thought. So the field house had two separate sides. On the one side, Ted Atchison would handle all the boys' stuff, and that was his side. We would wrestle in there, play foosball, you know, whatever. And on the girls' side, which was the other side of the field house, Miss Marie Winiger, she ran all the girls' stuff. Now, listen, I don't think I went over there but one time in my entire life living in that neighborhood, so I can't tell you what was going on over there, but it was scary. Scary. Didn't want to go. Marie Winiger was just a wonderful, wonderful lady and a throwback to another time. I don't think I'd ever seen her anything but a dress, sitting at her desk, getting things ready for the day, and always just very nice. So they would sit in there. Atch would be at his desk, and Miss Winnie would be at her desk. And in the middle, in the back, there was this little room, and there was a coffee pot back there and all that kind of stuff for them. And it was always interesting because, in all I know this from the boys' side, if somebody would have to go to the bathroom, there was an outside entrance. You could also cut through Atch's office and then go through. But he might grab you at some point going, how many times are you going to go to the bathroom today, Butch? What's the deal? And you go into the bathroom, and if somebody knew you were in the bathroom, there was a chain inside that back room. You could flush the toilet while they were sitting on the john. That was a big deal back then. Don't know if that happened on the girls' side. And in that main office, there was, Atch had, I don't know how many pictures under the glass on his desk. The same for Miss Winiger. All the kids that spent time over the many decades that they taught there and that they were really in charge of the park there, all kids had their pictures under glass on their desk. It was just a grand thing. and the coveted Bucky Harris Award. I don't know who Bucky Harris is or was, but there was an award up there given out every year, and boy, we sure hoped someday we could have our name on that, even though I didn't know what it was for. And Mr. Speck was the custodian of the place, and he was just, I'm trying to remember exactly what he looked like. He was an interesting guy. He kept to himself. You know, the rumors about him, of course, swirled around and around. He must be some sort of, you know, alien from another planet, because he didn't say a heck of a lot. And he always took care of his garden. He had this great flower garden right next to the alley on the inside part of the fence, obviously. But he tended this garden. And he was the guy that kept the place shipshape. And what I remember most about Mr. Speck was that there was a little tool shed, probably 10 feet away from the field house towards the alley. And in between the two, there was a sandbox there. There was two sandboxes at the playground. And we would take to climbing on the tool shed because, you know, why not? That's what you do. Even though we had, let's see, you had the poles you can climb on. They had the ladders you could climb on. They had two slides. They had the kiddie swings. They had horseshoe pits. Don't even get me started on that. I did a whole Wednesday rant blog on the art and sport of throwing a horseshoe. Who does that anymore up here? We did that. And then there was the big swings, and then there was the monkey bars, and then there was merry-go-round, and there was all kind of stuff there that you could break your neck on, but nobody really cared because we were having a good time. But this tool shed was there, and when he found out that we were climbing on the tool shed, he decided one day he'd walk through the alley and pick up all the dog shit that was out there. And then he went around and he took a spatula or like a trowel and he put the dog shit all the way around the edge of the roof of the shed. And so when we get on somebody's shoulder and go up there and grab onto it, we got a handful of dog shit. You can't pay for that kind of entertainment, I'm here to tell you. And then in 1973, which was my eighth grade year at Belding, most of that other stuff happened, as I said, when I came there in second grade all the way up to eighth grade. But in 1973, a new guy came onto the horizon, Mr. Woitan. Gary Woitan came along, and he was the guy who opened the park on Saturday. So Atch and Miss Winnie would be there Monday through Friday. Mr. Speck would come and go. But on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, starting in 1973, I believe, that's a long time ago, Gary Woitan would open the park. And, you know, it just, the continuity was just there. He was a neighborhood guy. He had been a student teacher at Belding, and then he became the Saturday morning guy there, and then he went on to teach and still teaches to this day. I believe he lives out in Arizona, but he's became a partner in good crime back in the day. We would go to Beale's Bakery, and I'd grab a gallon of milk and a huge piece of German chocolate cake, if not the whole cake, and I'd drag it back to the park. We'd sit there, stuff our faces, and word would get out, and all the guys would show up there. We just had a heck of a time with Gary. And, you know, all those people, Ted Atchison, Miss Winiger, Mr. Speck, Gary Woitan, they all made up the fabric of our lives. And it was just something that as I think about it all these years later, has more value with each passing day. That is for sure. One of the most wonderful things I remember about growing up there and at Belding Playground with Miss Winnie and Mr. Atch was Halloween. To my dad, Halloween was a big deal. That's for another time when I'll do a podcast in October about the haunted house. My dad basically thought he was Dracula, you know, 3 months out of the year. We'll get to that another time. But Halloween there was a spectacular event. There was a huge costume party and bobbing for apples, and we'd all make lanterns with real candles in them, out of paper. I mean, these lanterns were out of paper, right, on a stick? And there were candles inside, and we would go on the lantern parade around the neighborhood. Feeling very Norman Rockwell-ish. Maybe that's why I have all these Norman Rockwell prints in my office. But what an amazing time with some amazing people that really cost us nothing but meant everything, that's for sure. I just have such vivid, vivid memories. And all this happens every time I go get a haircut. I go swimming in this stuff. On one hand, it is exactly what the definition of bittersweet is. It is so bitter for me to go there and see how things have changed, but it's also so sweet to know that it was that way at one time and that I had the chance to experience that. My friends did. And because I have lifelong friends. I have a guy who's been in my life since I moved there, which was in second grade. We've been friends since 1966. He was the first guy that I saw going to the park one night. We'd moved there in December of 66, just in time for the big storm in 1967 in Chicago. And I was at the park, and I was at the top of the slide. And there was nobody in the whole place. I'll never forget it. And the lights were on. It was snowing. It was kind of Currier and Ives. It was great. And there's this kid standing at the bottom of the slide. And so I slide down, and because it was slippery, that's why they call it a frickin' slide, slid right off and knocked him right on his butt. And we laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And his name's Al. And to this day, we're friends. And see, that's the kind of thing that in this world we all live in now, these technical advances. I'm sitting at a stoplight watching four people walk in the crosswalk looking at their phones. And I'm just amazed at that. You know, our technology has far surpassed our humanity. I don't think that's a good thing. So the little rant that I have here today on Freebie Friday is about remembering and being reminded of where we've come from. It gets harder and harder over the years for me to remember what my folks' voices sound like. They've both been gone for a long time. It gets harder and harder for me to close my eyes and sit back and open a file drawer in my head that says Watermelon Day, which is when Atch would have about 30 watermelons he'd buy at the farmer's market, and it cost us nothing. And we would sit there all day in the heat and gorge ourselves on watermelons. It gets harder and harder to remember that. I remember the fire department, Engine 69, would come over, and they would turn the hose on. They'd hook the hose up to the basketball backstop, and they would shoot water up in the air. And we figured out if we took our T-shirts off, tadpoles that we were, and covered the sewers, we could create a frickin' swimming pool right there at the playground. What a time. What a time. And at night, when the lights would come on, the park closed at 9 o'clock. Everybody knew it. But we had a rule where I lived. Maybe it was like that where you live too. When the street lights came on, if your ass wasn't hitting the bottom step, end of the world, buddy. It's just the way it was. So I think sometimes part of my difficulty with the way the world is today has to do with the world that I grew up in yesterday. And while I've been pretty adaptable to change, some of it makes no sense to me because I don't think it's for the better. I think we've lost so much of ourselves because of technology. Now, even though I'm sitting at home and I'm talking to you on this little tiny Zoom machine, which is great technology, I'm hoping to infuse some of that with things that have nothing to do with technology except our relationship to each other and our sense of neighborhood and our sense of a friendship. Most of the people that listen to this podcast, I've never met in person. That fascinates me. For so many years, most of us, our friendship circle, it was people we knew. We knew who they were. They lived right down the street, or they were next door, or you saw them at the block party, or in class. That was the extent of it. That was the extent of it. Or maybe on a softball team or a football team. As our lives expanded, so did our circle of friends. But I don't think I've ever really grasp the concept that there are people that know more about me than I actually know more about them. Most of it comes from because I write books, I've been on the radio, I get that. But the fact that you can connect with people that you've never met in person and still have the connection to them, I think jumps over the technology and says it's really about more than that. It's really, really about more than that. And we forget that. We get distracted. All this garbage that's in the headlines, because there's been garbage in the headlines since there were headlines. And we get distracted and pulled away to this stuff that's none of our business. Look, if the world's ending, you'll know. But the rest of it just takes up file space, in my opinion, observation, and experience. So, turns out as I go to the barber shop today, it's closed. There's a sign on the door that says, I'm taking the day off, I'll see you tomorrow. It was perfect. And so it just gave me a little bit more time to make the loop and go past the Menzer's house and the Christensen's house and the Kehoe's and just swim in this stuff. And as I said a little bit earlier, most times in life, I don't even know how much I need that until I get that. The rust builds up over time, and it's hard to scrape off. We find ourselves so outwardly directed and driven, with all the news we can't use, we're supposed to make a judgment on or an observation on or weigh in on, and then we're on to the next thing. I was thinking this morning, this is so interesting, and you know, the news cycle is what it is, and humans have a forgettery more than a memory, sadly. And I was just thinking about Roseanne and being, you know, knocked off the air for stupid Twitter comments and the stuff that she said. And within, you know, 48 hours, forgotten, gone. You bring it up, it's like, oh, yeah, that happened. And so this stuff comes at us so fast that we can't possibly keep up. And I think because of that, it makes the times when I go get a haircut, or not, because he's closed, so much more important. And while I'm all about being responsible in life at my age, about paying the bills and do what I can and being responsible for all that stuff, I'm more interested now in my ability to respond to life than I am about my responsibility for it. Because in the end, all I can do is really respond to what's going on in the world. I can't really change any of it. And one of the things I've often said, and this gets more and more important to me every day that I'm alive, is that you're probably not going to be able to change the world for the better. I mean, in mass, the world, 7 billion humans, that's not going to happen. Nobody has that ability. Nobody has that ability. But what you do have is the ability to make sure that the world doesn't change you for the worse. That the watermelon day and that the fire hose hooked up by the fire department and swimming out in Lake Belding and driving down to Foster Beach and baking like a clam, take a drive down Irving Park to Clark Street, walk all the way to Wrigley Field and get the left field bleachers for like $2. A $10 bill gets you a whole day at Wrigley, sometimes a doubleheader back in the day. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who said, you know, there was a time you could go to Wrigley Field, go to the game, and if you went around and picked up garbage or put seats up in a whole row all the way around the park, you get a free ticket to the next game. Those days are gone. But they're as important as they ever were because of how distracted we are, because of the things we've lost along the way. To me, those are our anchors. Those are the things that help us not totally drift up shit creek. Because if you don't have those anchors, shit creek can get pretty crowded. So this is Freebie Friday. I just wanted to pass that along to you, that wherever you're at listening to this, kind of ramble on about getting a haircut, like the George Thorogood song, you know, get a haircut and get a real job. Well, we'll see about that. But wherever you're listening and wherever you're from, I know you have those anchors. I know that. And it's oftentimes difficult to remember and remind yourself, but it's critical, critical in these days that has so much anger and so much separation and so much who's doing what to the neighbor's cat and what happened here and what. Stop, drop, and roll out of the fire. Otherwise, the smoke will take you out. And so I appreciate you subscribing if you're a subscriber, and if you're not, I don't know why not, because this stuff gets even better when it's twice as long. You got to hear me behind the firewall. I really appreciate the support. Safe travels. Until next time, adios.